White Rocket Entertainment.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. Now everybody, come on everybody. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo,
yo. Football. Oh, hello and welcome to the Men in Auburn Polos. I mean to the AU Wishbone. And actually this week, even though we didn't expect it, to AU Wishbone TV, brought to you by Women in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host in the little box there.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we are back for our post-A-Day dissection and autopsy. But we've been having all kinds of crazy technical problems tonight, so we'll try to be concise. We actually got a whole lot to cover and a lot to talk about, but we've been having we were trying to do an experiment tonight using just audio and using a landline type connection for a better signal, neither one of which actually ended up. So we're back to good old Google Hangouts and AU Wishbone TV until I can get all these technical issues solved. So, that being said, what are your immediate thoughts as we come back for the show for the first time in what, 2 or 3 weeks?
Well, it's Sunday evening. It's the day after A Day. So my immediate thoughts are about A Day. And I think, you know, people ask me a couple times, what is success during spring practice and what is success during A Day? And I think Jerry Hinton had this tweet yesterday that like success is Carl Lawson did not suffer a season-ending injury, okay? And that's a yes, no, and he did not. Therefore, it's success.
Yes.
That would have been failure. So anything other than that is success. In terms of the game itself, you know, it was super vanilla on offense. They didn't show a whole lot. I thought the defense looked really good. I thought they played well, and I thought showed a lot of depth and a lot of talent on the defense side of the ball. The quarterback didn't show a whole lot. They didn't have a lot of chance to show much with being non-contact and not being able to really make plays. But, you know, overall, I felt like I didn't expect the offense to show me much because Gus isn't going to show his cards in a public scrimmage that's televised for his opponents. He's not. It doesn't matter how much angst it causes the fan base if it makes, you know, 0.00001% difference in a game this fall, he's not going to show anything. And therefore, he didn't. So that's what I think.
Yeah, it wasn't just vanilla. It was vanilla with whipped cream on top with a mayonnaise sandwich on white bread. It was bland. Bland, 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 bland. But and it did indeed drive the Twitter Nocenti very up their Twitter walls, believe me. Well, before we get fully started tonight, I have a few things to note. And I'll go very quickly with these. Number one, John, this is our 100th full-length episode tonight.
Outstanding.
100.
Congratulations.
Now, some may notice, I don't know if you notice this or not, those that follow the show on iTunes as opposed to, say, the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, I tried something experimental last week because I knew that we had the server space for something small. We're also having issues with our provider, our host. So there's just all kinds of technical things going on that are bedeviling the show right now. But I put up a clip episode. I took the most interesting coach in the world segment from the previous show, and I put it up as like a 3.5 minute clip. I got the idea from the Audible with Stuart Mandel and what's his name? The other writer,
Bruce Feldman.
Bruce Feldman. Yeah. They put up clip episodes about the same time they put up their regular episodes. And I thought that's kind of neat because it lets you go back and hear, you know, you can listen to just certain little segments instead of having to listen the whole hour if you don't have time or you don't want to. So I'm curious what people thought about that. It's been downloaded by almost as many times as the full episode has now. So hopefully everybody found that worthwhile and not boring. Also last week, we finally hit 100,000 downloads just via iTunes. That doesn't count other outlets like the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, et cetera, just through, you know, the Podbean hosted iTunes account. 100,000. So we're averaging over the life of this show, 1,000 downloads per episode. Bearing in mind that that first year or so, we were averaging like 5. So since,
well, and again, that let's review. That was 2012. Okay, those were the dark days, and those diehard listeners who are still with us from 2012. You know what a slog that was to come in and talk about those games and listen to us, you know, suffer through it with us. And we appreciate you hanging in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the meantime, we've gone up over 1,000 an episode. So it's just really cool. I'm saying that because I want to thank the listeners. Our listeners are so awesome. They come back, they tune in, they put up with our nonsense, our audio and audio and all this stuff. And we really, really appreciate them. And it shows how loyal they are and how much they mean to us at 100,000 downloads. That just blows my mind.
Wait, I got something about listeners. I was talking to my dad, Ken Ringer, who had a book signing yesterday at A-Day at the Auburn University Bookstore. And two women came up to him and said they listened to the podcast. And they were both from Georgia. And they had a trivia question they were going to try and send to us or contact the show and try and stump us with. And I thought that was great. So I look forward to hearing that.
Oh, that's excellent. Excellent. I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah. How did the book signing go with Lorendo at A-Day at the AU bookstore?
It went fine. I think he was a little upset because the bookstore didn't open until noon. So they kind of opened the doors and then the book signing started. And a lot of people were around campus. But at that point, people were kind of tailgating and it wasn't like a usual game day kind of thing where the bookstore has been open since 9 o'clock in the morning or whatever. So,
Right. I'm sure the bookstore employees were pretty happy about not having to come in early on Saturday morning.
Probably. But,
yeah. We have another little quick announcement. I got two more. For this announcement, I need this. Yeah. Oh, yes, my friends. We're having a contest, John. I see your son making it because I'm the one making noise. See? Wah! This is what I don't like about the audio. Your video doesn't come up if I'm talking, see? We got to get that duplex back. Anyway, we're having a contest, my friends. The most interesting contest in the world. Here's what I want you to do. If you've heard our previous episode and the clip episode where we did the most interesting coach in the world, what I want you to do is send in your favorite most interesting coach in the world ideas, lines, quotes, like the ones that I did on the previous episode. Send in those either to auwishbone@gmail.com. There it is for those who are just looking on the video. There we go. Or through Twitter. And the ones that we like the best, I will use in an upcoming segment. Because those things are hard to write, and it's hard to write like 8 of them. Or I would have had another segment tonight. So I need you guys to help me out with that. All right? So, most interesting coach in the world segments. Send those in to me, and I'll give you credit, or I won't mention your name if you ask me not to. And cut. Thank you. All right. And then so what do you think? That should be fun, right? We'll see what.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a fun idea.
If you're not exactly sure what I'm talking about, just go back to the previous episode, which is a 3-minute clip. And you can hear us doing that last time. and just that sort of thing. Okay. Lastly, I have to point out something that happened that was very sad this week, John.
It's a trap.
You know what happened? Do I need to play it again?
The actor who played Admiral Akbar passed away. Is that correct?
It's a trap.
Yep, we lost at age 93. The mascot of the Ole Miss Rebel Black Bears, Admiral Akbar, passed away. It's a very sad moment. I guess I should. Okay, that's good enough. All right, so that's all on my notes. Now, for tonight's episode, the main
point. I was going to say, I didn't know the Calamari military also played taps. But
just a strange galactic coincidence, you know? It's a strange galactic coincidence. Well, we've got a lot of A-Day talk, and part of that is going to obviously be about quarterbacks. So before we get into that, the question that's been raised on Twitter and in the various Auburn circles for a while now, and it came roaring back yesterday and this morning, is what is the deal with Gus and Rhett and developing quarterbacks? You know, somebody jokingly said, should we just recruit our quarterbacks from the junior college ranks from now on? Because is it, you know, and some people are very harsh about it and are saying that Gus and Rhett are just incapable of developing a quarterback or perhaps even recruiting one since the ones we have now don't seem to be able to get the job done, et cetera. I've argued blue in the face against this, but I'm kind of tired of it. So I just want to ask you, what is the deal? Are we only able to win using quarterbacks coached by other staffs that then transfer in? and as a corollary on that, we've got another one maybe coming in now, Webb. From Texas Tech.
Yeah, who was supposed to be going to Colorado.
Yeah, what happened with that?
I mean, I think he's supposed to be going to Colorado, and I thought it was a done deal, and now he wants to visit Auburn again. Maybe he watched A-Day, and he's like, man, I got to visit there. I could play.
when you look at Colorado, you look at Auburn, and you visit Auburn, that's not a good sign when you're, you know, which have I got a better chance to start a meeting?
I understand the quarterback development discussion. I understand people being upset about it, and I think this all goes back to one thing, which is Jeremy Johnson sucked last year. And I think that's the entirety of the argument to me about quarterback development. I feel like Nick Marshall was an excellent quarterback for 2 years. And I think it's in hindsight, it's obvious how really good he was. And let's you know, everybody thinks it wasn't that good. Let's go back and say again, 2014, most ever yards ever against Alabama in any game. And I don't know if Clemson beat that or not, but that, you know, most yards ever against Alabama in any game on that defense. Okay, and there's a crappy Alabama defense. That was a really good Alabama defense. That was Nick Marshall. Okay, and that was again Rhett Lashley and Gus Malzahn calling the plays. I think the whole quarterback development things comes down to Jeremy Johnson had a couple of years under their wing and he was terrible last year. Sean White was a redshirt freshman who was, you know, I'm still not sure he's physically big enough or capable enough to play in the SEC. He got the crap beat out of him and he got injured. And I don't know if he could make it through another SEC season without getting the crud beat out of him. But I think if they'd have live jerseys on yesterday, I think Carl Lawson would have annihilated him a couple times. And we'd be scraping up Sean White off the field. So, you know, I think the whole thing with it is that, you know, Cam Newton transferred with junior college, Nick Marshall transferred with junior college. Chris Todd came in from somewhere else. But I also think, you know, they coach those guys too. Those guys weren't finished products when they got here. I think the quarterback coaching argument comes down to the, you know, Jeremy Johnson being terrible. And, I think that's the sum of it. Now, you know, I think they recruited Franklin because of this discussion that the offense looked bad without a quarterback who can run. And I think that goes back to the bigger question to me is not can they develop quarterbacks and can they coach quarterbacks, because I think they can. The question is, with the SEC in 2016, should we be recruiting smaller stationary quarterbacks like Sean White? And I get it. He was a high-profile recruit. He was the outstanding quarterback at the Elite 11. And I think in the right offense, again, we talked about this last year, you know, in the Boise State offense or whatever, I think Sean White would be like an all-conference kind of player. But in this offense against SEC defensive players, can he do that, or is he going to get crushed and get injured again? But do you have to have a guy who can really run? And I think it's clear that they can figure out what guys can do and try and tailor the offense to the players' strengths as a quarterback. Again, I think a lot of the Jeremy Johnson stuff last year was confidence and was mental. I've said this theory before, and I'm going to say it again. I want you to picture this scenario, okay? You're the starting quarterback for Auburn. You are Jeremy Johnson. Your roommate is Duke Williams, okay? Every day you have to listen to Duke Williams talk about how he didn't want to come back to school, but he did, and he wished he was in the NFL, and this sucks, and you better throw me the ball, and all this kind of stuff. And he had to listen, you know, and then Duke Williams doesn't show up at practice, and people are asking Jeremy where he is. You're his roommate. Don't you know where he is, whatever? And I want you to just think about that for a minute, you know, and then Duke's mouthing off to the coaches or screwing around or whatever. And, in the games, you know, not going hard at times. It was obvious, you know, in the week or two right before they cut him from the games, from the team, he was in the game, not going full out. And that was it for me. So, the quarterback, Jeremy Johnson, was his roommate. So as a human being, I think in addition to Jeremy Johnson's own struggles and his own issues, I think that having the best receiver on the team and the best receiver, you know, one of the two or three best receivers in the conference, you know, basically quit on him, really hurt him. And that's not a quarterback development issue. I mean, the fact that Jeremy Johnson didn't recover his confidence and then he kind of melted down in the LSU game and stuff, I get all that, and that's on them. But I don't think that means they can't develop quarterbacks. I mean, to me, I look at Ghost since 2010. You know, when they've been here, we've had 1 year of terrible quarterback play. That was last year. So I think they can coach quarterbacks. And I think, again, I think it's getting the right people in the right place. And whether it's Davis Webb or John Franklin III or Sean White or Woody Barrett, I think they'll figure it out and get the right person in there. I think the offense is going to be a lot better. So I understand the argument, though. I get it. All right, Van, I've talked.
I think that when people say that they're not doing a good job of evaluating and recruiting the right quarterback, I mean, in any given year, you have what you have available, and you take who you can get out of who's available. And if there's not a Cam Newton and there's not a Nick Marshall available, then you can't get them. And if they are out there, but they choose to go to Florida State or Michigan or something, then you don't get them. So taking Sean, you take a Sean White, because like you said, he was basically a four, might as well have been a five-star quarterback, and he's what's available, you take him.
I disagree with that. If your philosophy is we've got to have a running quarterback, but there are running quarterbacks playing at lesser schools or at 1AA or whatever, you could find a running quarterback if that's what you – it's a question of – do you think, are you trying to just find the best guy and then you tailor the offense to them like we've talked about, or do you think you have to have a running guy?
When they took Sean White, had they made that – we don't even know if they've made it now, but had they made a commitment to only recruiting dual quarterbacks, you know, 2.5 years ago when they signed Sean White and started recruiting him 4 years ago, no, probably.
No, they hadn't, because the other part is Jeremy Johnson's more like that than we want to admit. I mean, he's a big guy and he can run straight ahead or whatever, but he's not a runner.
Right. No, absolutely. Well, I just say, look, what was our name went right out of my head. Our 2009 Todd, Chris Todd, Chris Todd before Gus, Chris Todd by the end of 2009. Okay. Cam Newton at A-Day, Cam Newton against South Carolina in the SEC championship game. Nick Marshall against Washington State. Nick Marshall against Alabama. Okay, they all developed. They all got much better. They all looked like better passers by the end of their time, even if it was only 1 year. So I don't buy into the whole, you know, they make you worse or they don't make you as good or whatever. The best quarterbacks available, because he's won with different kinds of quarterbacks. It's just that we don't have this steamroller of an offense unless we have a dual threat quarterback that we seem to have discovered. So that's what he's kind of going after now. And if they can get that going, then great. Which takes us to A-Day. And let's talk about the quarterbacks, how they performed yesterday. What did you think? The order they came out in, I thought, was very interesting. First, you had JF3, John Franklin III, come out. He got several series in the first quarter. What did you think of his performance?
I thought it was fine, but again, I think you couldn't tell a whole lot because he couldn't run. I think there were some plays where if he had been allowed to really keep the ball and do a run on a read option kind of thing, I think it would have been much different. But I thought he looked okay. I think he's an okay passer, not a great passer. He's not a big guy.
No. I tell you, it's Ontario McCaleb playing quarterback.
But he looked very quick. Yeah.
So did Ontario McCaleb. Well, the question is, can he throw it, and he can throw it with accuracy? I thought that Sean White, let's segue to him then for a second. Sean White came in second, and Sean White threw the ball with great accuracy, didn't you think?
Yes, and I think that's what I expected. That's what he showed last year once he got settled in that Arkansas game and stuff. And I think he can do that. And I think once he was healthy and he had some time and stuff, I think he can throw the ball with accuracy. I think, so that's about what I expected from Sean White.
Well, let me point this out. The receivers that were letting Sean White down last year, we had fewer in this game yesterday, including not having the top two from the beginning of last season available. In other words, there was no Ricardo Lewis. There was no Duke Williams. All that our quarterbacks had to throw to what was left, when you take away our top receivers that graduated or left the team for whatever reason, and before you add the new ones in, I mean, we had Kyle Davis, but he can even play. He's hurt, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, we have five new quarterbacks coming in that are just world beaters, and not a one of them, you know, the only one that was on campus didn't play, and the other four aren't on campus. So our receiving core right now, to me, John, is about as thin and as and that's not even to – that's not even, I didn't even mention, I don't have it on here anymore. Yeah, I do. We didn't have him.
Nope.
So that's three of our top receivers from last year were gone without any replacements coming in, right? What we basically had was the B team of receivers that our quarterbacks were throwing to.
No, it was Marcus Davis and Tony Stevens and, you know, some guys.
Jason Smith.
Jason Smith, again, like I like when Jason Smith gets the ball. Every time he gets the ball, I think that's something positive. We need to get him the ball more.
Absolutely. Well, so I guess my point is the receivers were not on the field that could help those quarterbacks look better. And we've got to really hope the freshmen come in and can play immediately. I think that that Kyle Davis, because he's already on campus, he's going through practice and everything, has the biggest chance. But we need Stove, we need Myers, you know, to step up and be all freshman, all SEC, or we're not going to have a very good offense. I'm sorry.
I think you're right. I think they got to be playmakers.
Yes, they have to be. Okay, that's the quarterbacks and receivers. What about the running backs? There was a real mixed bag, wasn't it?
Well, they kept playing that one guy that I'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
We know we have a Juwan Robinson. I think if Juwan Robinson, you know, gets 25 carries a game, he's going to make a huge difference, and the offense is going to be is much more successful. You know, I think he's could be an all-SEC caliber player. I think, you know, you and I've talked about, we have, you know, our new third down / kick returner kind of guy in Rock Thomas and Kerryon Johnson.
Slash slot receiver.
That's it. / slot receiver. And then Kerryon Johnson is out, you know, with shoulder surgery, so we didn't see him. But we did see Malik Miller, who I kind of like the look of. Yeah, he got hurt, banged up. But I was listening to the Auburn radio broadcast, and they compared him to Rudy Johnson. And then one of the older guys compared him to William Andrews, which I thought was, you know, you and I can relate to. So
really? Didn't he get hurt in like the first play or something?
No, he had a few carries.
Okay. I didn't see enough to get a sense of what he can do, but those are two excellent comparisons. I mean, in the case of Andrews, he basically ended up as he was the fullback because he had Brooks and Cribbs behind him. In terms of Rudy Johnson?
Well, again, William Andrews was the fullback at Auburn, but on to the Falcons and was their leading rusher for about 6 years. So,
right. Well, I know that. But, I mean, at Auburn, because he had those two great running backs behind him,
sure,
the fullback. But Rudy Johnson was, you know, in 2000, was the entire offense basically in 2000, he and Ronnie Daniels.
And I think they were trying to make a comparison to his physical running style and his size or whatever. So,
yeah. Yeah, the thing about Rudy just dragging the defense, just dragging it out, making the first downs, moving the chains, that was the thing. He was just like a bulldozer, you know, more than any other back we've had in a long, you know, over the years. He was the tough as nails bulldozer grinded out guy. So if Malik Miller is anything, then we're in better shape than I thought, because my understanding was they weren't even sure they wanted to use him as a running back.
Well, and the other thing about running back is we saw the two fullbacks a ton yesterday, and they were excellent. Both of them made a lot of plays. And I thought, to me, that was the one thing offensively that I took away from the game is those guys are ready to step up and be a bigger factor this year, and they could be a bigger factor carrying the ball.
Yeah, that's a big change, isn't it? I mean, he just finished being a freshman and he's a fullback and he had your biggest run of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Cox. I mean, who saw that coming? I mean, if I had put down, you know, taken bets on which running back would have the biggest run, I don't think I would have gotten a lot of money on Chandler Cox.
No.
Anything else about the offense?
This is ugly, but I need to say it. Auburn was 1 for 22 on third down in that game.
That was unbelievable. And not good in the red zone.
And turn the ball over?
Mm. Oh, God. 1 of 22 is like kicking field goals and being worn down, that's like every problem from last year coming right back on us.
Yes.
I just have to keep saying to myself, not only to others, we didn't have all the receivers coming in. We didn't have Kerryon Johnson. The quarterback's just starting out. He hadn't gone through fall practice or summer practice or anything yet, you know, summer sessions. There were a lot of missing pieces. Plus, they were so vanilla. I mean,
and again,
there's a lot of.
We're going to give the ball to Javon Robinson a lot more. And, like, we didn't throw the ball in the red zone. We didn't throw the ball to the tight ends either, so which I think we're going to do a little bit more.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, the offense was underwhelming, and it was 19-10. So, you know, the question is always, was the defense that good or was the offense that bad or some combination? So that gets us to the defense. What did you think about the defense?
I thought the defense was good. Again, the offense was super vanilla, but I thought the defense played well. I thought there was there's clearly a lot of depth. There's a lot of talent on the defensive line, a lot of good players. I thought Trey Williams played well. I thought, you know, Lawson was obviously great. But the one thing that came out of this game made me feel good besides the fullbacks was Marlon Davidson's a player, the new freshman defensive lineman. I mean, we thought. You know, last year we were kind of waiting for Byron Cowart to show up, and he never did. Marlon Davidson, you know, has been on campus for a month and a half, whatever. He showed up in that game. So that was kind of exciting.
He's already ahead of Byron Cowart, and he's only been on campus like, you know, 2 weeks.
So I think he can play, and I think that's the guy that's going to make a difference this fall. So, and I thought the linebackers looked good. I thought the pursuit was really good. There wasn't any huge coverage bust where, you know, the defenders left guys wide open. And I thought it looked kind of like a carryover from the bowl game where the defense had a good attitude and played hard and played good physical football. But again, at the same time, the offense was bad and the quarterback play wasn't great. And I think that made the defense look good. So,
yeah, I have to hope that they're better. And it's not just that the offense was so bad that any defense would look good. What impressed me as much as anything about what the defense did, because I expected Carl Lawson to chase, you know, all around the field, and I expected Montravius to have a good game and all that. What impressed me was the speed getting outside. I mean, over and over they tried running plays on offense where they would quickly get the ball out to the receivers on, you know, horizontally. They weren't having any of that. The offense was going backwards when they were doing that. So I'm cautiously optimistic about the defense.
I just want to say this. I'm a defensive first guy, and I think the defense is going to be better this year.
Yeah,
I feel very good about it.
It disturbed me that last year Kevin Steele coached the number 14 red zone defense at LSU. It's hard to imagine LSU having number 14 anything on defense. He coached the number 14 red zone defense, and our offense couldn't score a touchdown on the defense coached by that coach. I mean, I know I'm turning a few corners there to get to my point, but you get my point, right? We went up against a coach that was worst in the SEC at stopping teams in the red zone, and they stopped us in the red zone.
I get you.
So, okay. Areas of strength or concern heading into the fall? What about that?
Well, again, I didn't write down special teams, but Daniel Carlson is excellent, and our special teams are in very good shape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't give them an A-plus just because we have no idea what the punt coverage team, the kick coverage team, the kickoff return team, we didn't do any of that. You know, all they did was just, like, catch punts with no pressure. But the field goal unit certainly was outstanding, and that gave them an A alone. What is the one unit you're most concerned about, offense, defense, special teams, on, you know, within those areas? What's the one single unit you're most concerned about going into the fall? I think mine's pretty obvious.
Here's a wide receiver.
Mine is wide receiver, because if the receivers are good, the quarterbacks can be about like they were last year, midway, later in the season, you know, when Sean could, before Sean got hurt. Okay. We'll be okay. We'll be great, but we'll be okay. But if the quarterbacks are kind of okay and the receivers are terrible, they're just going to drop everything. They're never going to be open.
Mm-hmm.
They're never going to make any plays.
or catch the ball and gain a yard, get tackled. So,
or just keep dropping it, like, you know, in the Arkansas game. By the way, on YouTube, War Room Eagle, our buddy War Room Eagle, he has the cut up of Auburn offense versus Arkansas. It's like 10 minutes of drop passes. But actually, it's not as bad as I remembered. I went through and was counting the drop, and we go second and third quarter, and there's not really hardly any drop passes. The first quarter is horrible. You know, when we got off to a 14-0 deficit because of that. But once it was 14-0, we played them pretty evenly heads up, and of course took them to overtime. So, and outplayed them to take them to overtime. So it's ridiculous that we lost that game. We should have never lost that game last year. No way we should have lost Arkansas last year. I'm personally insulted just thinking about it now. I want to send a dirty email to some Arkansas fan just out of the blue, just because I'm so mad about it.
Bert Bielema beat us last year, man.
You know what you got to do, Auburn?
Blame yourself.
That's right.
I didn't answer the question. I guess I'm torn between quarterbacks and wide receivers, and I got to say right now it's quarterbacks. I'm still super worried about that.
That's fine. We need one of us to worry about receivers and one of us to worry about quarterbacks, and that way we cover all the angles. So
okay.
Let me see. We've got a
factoid of the week.
Okay, so my factoid of the week this week, instead of going with like just one little thing, I want to throw something out, and I want to see if our listeners can come up with some other ones. My students have been reading a couple of Bill Bryson books in one of my history classes, just as a fun, you know, research book. And, you know, in a lot of his books, like 1927 and At Home, Bryson talks about things that happened at roughly the same time. Like, you know, in 1927, he talks about Babe Ruth's home run year was the same time as Charles Lindbergh flying the Atlantic and all that. Okay. Also, it makes me think about the 30 for 30 on the 1994, that day in 1994. I haven't seen it, but I know about it. You probably remember this, though, from actual real life. There was one day in 1994 where the NBA Finals were going on. The first World Cup game in the United States was being played. There was some hockey thing going on. And the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase were all going on at the same time. Okay? You remember these things?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I was trying to think of times in the past that an Auburn game was going on or was associated with some other big event, probably sports, maybe not. Okay. I came up with three I'm going to throw out you real quick. If there's anywhere we can see if our listeners come up with anything. So here we go real quick. The first one that came to me was 1986. Auburn was like 6-0, and we went to play undefeated Mississippi State in Starkville. It was the first time that Auburn had played an undefeated Mississippi State in 175 years. And, of course, Brent Fullwood ran for, you know, 200 yards, and we beat the mess out of Mississippi State. But do you remember what sporting event was going on another channel while Auburn was beating undefeated Mississippi State in 1986?
No.
At the exact same time that we were playing them.
No, no idea.
It was the Bill Buckner Met Red Sox, where the Red Sox were going to win the World Series, and I guess it was Mookie Wilson or somebody hit the ball, and it went between Buckner's legs, and the Mets won, and they came back and won Game 7?
Yes.
Yeah, that was at the exact same time that undefeated Auburn was playing undefeated Mississippi State. All right, that's one. I think also that was also the year when Saturday Night Live did the skit where the two guys in the basement were trying to decide what to watch on TV, and like Dana Carvey or somebody said, "Oh, look, Auburn's playing Mississippi State." And I'm just like, I almost fell out of my chair. All right, here's another one. 1995, Auburn was playing at Arkansas.
I knew this one. This was the one that immediately came to my mind.
Okay, we were lining up to try to kick a field goal to win after we had furiously come back to pull the game within like 3 points or something. What was happening on the other channel while Auburn was playing Arkansas in 1995?
The Braves were trying to beat the Cleveland Indians and win the World Series.
That night.
The same time. We had two TVs in our house, and I was in front of one, and my wife was in front of the other.
I bet I know which was which. Yeah. I was with an ex and their family, and they had no interest in Auburn football at all. And so I kept changing the channel back to the Auburn. This was in Atlanta. And I kept changing the TV back to the Auburn-Arkansas game. I feared for my life. I feared I was going to be murdered if I kept turning the Braves World Series off.
Well, and again, as a Braves fan, that was after, you know, this was 95, so it was after, you know, the other World Series, you know, after the Twins World Series. This was the Braves chance to finally break through. So,
right. They'd come so close in 91. They came so close in 92. So 95 was, you know, 93, they didn't win the division, or they didn't win the league. And then 94, of course, was the strike. Mm-hmm. So 95 was their next real chance. And of course, after that, we know what happened, but mostly with the Yankees. Okay. The other one I thought of may not have been exactly the same time, but it had to do with all this stuff going on at the same time. And that was 2001. Auburn was scheduled to play Syracuse in Syracuse, New York, the week of 9/11. And we ended up we played them the week after, because I think it was the LSU game that weekend. We ended up moving LSU to the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then we played played Syracuse in New York the next weekend. And I ended up canceling my flight because I didn't want to fly to New York like less than 10 days after 9/11. So, okay, well, that's the three that I thought of. So if anybody's got any more where there's like something doubling up like that, you know, we'd love to hear. So, let me see, John, I think it's time.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
Okay, so do we have any questions from the audience?
We got a few good questions. The first one is from Josh Uwe, who's AU fan 1983, and he says, which freshman wide receiver will see the most playing time?
Well, yeah, you got to think Kyle Davis, just because he's on campus already and going through, you know, even though he's no contact, he's going through practice. Do you agree with that, or you think like Myers or Eli Wells?
I think it's got to be Davis, just because I think he's understanding the offense and the, you know, what's expected and the plays and that kind of stuff. I think it puts him in a good position when he's physically ready, you know, to be a guy that comes in and plays right away.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Rusty Owens asks, what do you think of the QB situation in light of the Davis Webb news?
Yeah, we've kind of touched on that already. I mean, is this a dual threat quarterback, or is this going to be another pocket?
This is a better version of Chris Todd.
Ooh, that's right. I still think that the future is JF3 if he can, you know, successfully complete passes and make handoffs.
I think it is JF3 also. And I think, you know, the one of the articles I read today, maybe Brandon Marcello's article about this topic, said that Webb had not actually contacted Auburn. He just announced that Auburn hadn't said, yes, come in for a visit, we will give you a scholarship. So,
wow. All right. In that case, I'd like to announce that I'm going to be going down to Auburn and playing for them at quarterback. So, well,
we need you.
Well, that part is, it's true.
War Damn Ways says, on a scale of 1 to 2008, how worried are you about the offense for the upcoming season?
Well, let me correct what I just said. That's the funny thing is, it as bad as our offense is worrying us, they're not that bad. But On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned am I about the offense? Was that the question?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 2008.
I don't know. I'm worried about the offense, and I will be worried about the offense until they give me reason not to be worried.
Let me say this. I'm worried about the quarterback situation a little bit, but I think that, you know, a healthy Sean White would be fine. And I think JF3 could be better than fine. I think the offense is going to be better because I think we're going to give the ball to Javon Robinson 20 times a game, which we didn't do last year except in the bowl game when, hey, look, you know, things worked out better. So I think, you know, unleashing him is going to make the offense better. Yeah, we haven't talked about offensive tackle at all. That's still an issue. They got beat, you know, by the defensive ends a little, but that's going to happen with Lawson. But so that's still an area of concern. But I think I think the strength of the team, you know, on offense to me is the two guards and Javon Robinson and like the fullbacks. You know, I see, you know, Petway leading Javon Robinson, you know, behind Braden Smith. And that being like, or the other guard is completely blanked out his name right now. That being the core of the offense, I think that's what's going to happen. I think that's where the offense is going to go. So, Alex Cozy. Sorry, blanked out there.
Cozy. Think about this, John. The offense that we saw yesterday was no different from last year's offense, except JF3, but missing several other pieces, including the running back and the two top receivers from the beginning of last year, the three beginning of last year. Okay, so what we had out there was basically the exact same offense that didn't do much last year, but with some pieces missing and a new quarterback that doesn't know the offense very well yet. That was the only difference. So to expect the offense to be magically vastly better with less than it had last year seems a little, you know, ridiculous. The offense is going to be better when the quarterbacks get better. Sean's going to keep getting better. Hopefully, JF3 is going to keep getting better. When the new receivers come in, when Kerryon Johnson can play again, but even then it'll be what we had last year, when Kyle Davis can play again, when, even Malik Miller got hurt. So, I just felt like the offense had no real reason to be much better yesterday when it was 94% the exact same offense as last year, but minus some of the top players.
Well, but I would say, like, if they had been working to solve the problems of last year, coach them up, it should have been a little better. But I think a lot of that comes down to super, super vanilla. And a lot of times I think the defense knew what was coming. So,
all right.
I think that's you're taking advantage of surprising the defense and putting them in a bad position and stuff in that kind of game. Our last question comes from KC1 Brave Man fan who says, I've heard the talk that JF3 is not passing that well so far. Is he still the big favorite, or do you think it could be White, JJ, or other?
Well, the thing I was hearing all last week was people whispering that he was not doing well handing the ball off, that there were mesh problems. Like, and he even said it in an interview later that he was having trouble, like he'd hold onto the ball too long and it would pull loose when the running back would try to take it or fake it and it would fall on the ground. And so he's supposed to be working on that. In fact, he's the only quarterback that didn't fumble during the game. So that made me feel a little bit better about ball security with him. But I didn't think a couple of passes probably from Sean and one from Jeremy. I didn't think any of the quarterbacks looked particularly impressive throwing the ball, but again, they didn't have anybody to throw it to. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's still probably the favorite. I think because the offense has a different dimension. I think the mesh thing is something they can work that out. It's a code, you know, they can do a million repetitions of that and coach it up. And I think, you know, that they'll work that out. And again, like some of it is we didn't have out the receiver, but some of it is who we chose not to throw the ball to. We didn't throw. We had the big tight end out there, Landon Rice, and we didn't throw the ball to him. I mean, he's supposedly been making a bunch of plays and scrimmages and, you know, practice and stuff, but they didn't throw the ball to him at all. So, I think the offense is going to be better because of the things I talked about. And I think, you know, I think Robinson could do the job. So, I mean, I'm sorry. I think JF3 can do the job. I think he's going to be the guy. If Sean's a quarterback, I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be fine. I think if Jeremy Johnson's a quarterback, then it's time to panic.
Maybe so. I don't. Somebody compared him to Jason Campbell struggling his first couple of years, but I just never felt like Jason completely lost the plot and just disintegrated, unraveled the way that Jeremy seemed to.
That Jason game at Syracuse when they had that really good pass rusher, it was kind of that way.
Yeah, but also in Syracuse, that was Jason's freshman year, his redshirt freshman year, and he ran for like a 45-yard touchdown up the middle, kind of like Jeremy's long touchdown run.
Mm-hmm.
He struggled some having four different offensive coordinators in 4 years. Which is something that some Auburn fans wish that our quarterbacks were having right now. Somebody asked me what I'll be doing at Dragon Con this year, and I thought, well, I can't really answer yet because I'm waiting on the programming tracks to decide what they're going to do. But for those that follow such things, we are definitely going to – this is my suggestion, is that we do in the literature track, we do a panel on the 1966 Hugo Awards. If you want to blow your mind as a science fiction fan, just look on Wikipedia for 1966 Hugo Awards. It's like the all-star game of sci-fi writers and artists. It'll blow your mind. So I just want to throw that out there. We're definitely going to do that, but that's still several months away. Let's see. Did we have any around the SEC? I know that there were other spring games. They did the whole everybody gets to be on TV thing.
No, I didn't see anything else from other SEC teams that was super exciting. I mean, there's been a lot, you know, Auburn's been very lucky in terms of injuries. There's been a lot of big injuries at other schools this year. We have to, you know, and the other thing that happened is Georgia, you know, changing their FOIA law to protect the football program, which is insane, but that's the dumbest thing I've heard.
Somebody on Twitter was saying that Texas A&M's offense looked really good, and it's too bad that Auburn doesn't have, you know, coaches like that. And I said, well, we did. We fired him after 2001. We did have a coach.
Yeah, we did have. I mean,
Noel Mazzone. Yes. We traded him in for Bobby Petrino.
But it's also like, if you're Gus Malzahn, this is a theoretical question. If you're Gus Malzahn and you know the offense struggled last year and you know that fans are grumbling and media are concerned about the quarterbacks and the offense and stuff, wouldn't you have just loosened up a little bit yesterday and tried to make some big exciting plays and stuff just to just generate a little positive buzz and excitement? But he just didn't know. Like, it was like, we're going to run the, you know, that Tolbert guy. I didn't even know he was on the roster. He carried the ball about 20 times.
And there was the walk-on quarterback who's like the sacrificial victim. You know? everybody else gets an orange jersey, and they're all like, oh, no, go ahead and put that white one on. And the whole defense is just like,
yeah, that guy came in the game and like, oh, we really get to tackle him.
So, yeah, that would suck for him. Because it was funny because JF3 said he wished he had not had a non-contact jersey on just because, you know, he knows that's his game. He doesn't get to show hardly anything he can do when he's off limits. So, All right. Anything you can't let go. Do I have my sound effect for that? Yeah, there it is. So was there anything out there that you can't let go this week?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm, glad that we actually had, A-Day and people talking about football and excited about football again, because it's not that far away.
It's not. I think the thing I can't let go is people that keep just – they've basically decided that Gus and Rhett Lashley are the problem. They are the smartest Auburn fans in the world. They have diagnosed the problem. We don't need any more study. They know exactly what the problem is. It is Gus and Rhett, and the team will just never be any good until they are gone. These are the kind of people that, to me, root for us to lose so they can be right and we can all be wrong. And I really, really don't like that. And it just gets under my skin. And people wonder why I engage with these people on Twitter and so forth. It's because it ticks me off so bad. I just can't stand it. And I can't let it go. So there you go. What have we learned tonight, John? The stupid audio recorder thing still doesn't work. And I'm going to have to redo the whole computer to get it to work.
We've learned that Van would like to throw the Skype audio recorder off a mountaintop.
I would, yes. I would like it to transfer to Florida State or somewhere like that. I guess we've learned that A-Day didn't enthuse us, but there are a whole lot of caveats to that. There's a whole lot of but, .. you know?
That's right.
And when you take all those things into account, I mean, I don't know if we're ready to go out and beat Clemson, but I also don't think it's time to just, become hockey fans or something either.
Nothing wrong with hockey.
Yeah. I was going to do a Formula One update tonight, but I don't have
we can wait.
I don't have a theme song for it. I can tell you that Rosberg has won the first two races, and there's another one coming up a week from today. And Team Mercedes is dominating. I've learned this much, John. See, I'm already getting into the swing of it. Mercedes is the car to beat, and the Mercedes drivers are unbelievable. And Nico Rosberg is number one right now, and defending world champion Hamilton is number two, basically. So there you go. You now know more about Formula One than you knew or than you wanted to know. Congratulations. I think we need to get on out of here before we get killed by our respective wives and so forth. So I hope you enjoyed the opening of tonight's show. I'm not sure how much longer that'll stay around. I just thought it'd be something neat for change. And you got this little bonus video coverage that nobody expected. So I guess there's nothing much left to say, but War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.